Well, welcome to another one of my podcasts, and today I'm going to talk about a jazz singer to begin with. The great names of female jazz singers are, of course, Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, and Sarah Vaughan. The one I'm going to talk about today, however, was born around the same time as Sarah Vaughan, never quite as famous, but nevertheless is one of those legendary names. She was born, however, with a different name. What she was called is Ruth Lee Jones, and she was born in 1924. Like many jazz singers, her entry into music was through the world of gospel, and she sang in church and played piano. But in her early teens, she started singing other stuff and was heard at a talent contest. And by the age of 16, 17, 18, that sort of age, she was singing in Chicago clubs like Dave's Rum Boogie in the downbeat room of the Sherman Hotel, where she even got a chance to sing with Fats Waller. Playing at the Three Deuces, a jazz club, a friend took her to hear Billie Holiday, who was playing at the Garage Stage Bar. This was owned by somebody called Joe Sherman, and she got a chance to sing upstairs in a smaller room. And so impressed this owner, Mr. Sherman, that he hired her, and for a while you would be able to go to this club and hear Billie Holiday downstairs and this lady upstairs. He also suggested that she change her name from Ruth Jones, which I suppose was a bit forgettable, to what she became known as, which is Dinah Washington. It wasn't long before she was heard by Lionel Hampton and she became his singer. She had a whole string of hits over the next 15 years before dying of, unfortunately, an unintended drug overdose at the age of just 39. Because of the period in which she was singing, her jazz career overlapped the beginning of rock and roll in the form of something that was called rhythm and blues in those days, quite different from today's rhythm and blues, of course. The songs were really an updated version of the sort of stuff that Bessie Smith had sung 20 years before, but with, of course, a much more modern type arrangement. This particular one was recorded on the 27th of September 1949 and is a typical blues of the sort that she was singing at the time. On this particular recording, she's accompanied by a gentleman who was a drummer and who had a big band, and his name was Teddy Stewart. The song's lyric is about her boyfriend, mythical or otherwise, who was drunk all the time, hence the title, Juicehead Man of Mine, 27th of September, 1949, Dinah Washington. Great track.
Every day I catch him hanging round in a saloon. Yes, I'm talking about that juice head man of mine. Lord, he stays so juice, I swear he's about to lose his mind. He gets juiced every morning, juiced every night. Come home meaning evil and always wants to fight. Yes, I'm talking about that Jew's head man of mine. Lord, he stays so Jew, I swear he's about to lose his mind. Yes, he saves every nickel, saves every dime, spends his money only for whiskey and wine. Yes, I'm talking about that Jew's head man of mine. Lord, he stays so Jew, I swear he's about to lose his mind. He's a mess when he gets his head full of junk. Every time I kiss him, he's smelling like a skunk. Yes, I'm talking about that Jew's head man of mine. Lord, he stays so Jew, I swear he's about to lose his mind. Now when he asks me out for dinner, he takes a drink or two. Then he shouts, come here, baby, I want to make love to you. Yes, I'm talking about that Jew's head. I swear I'm about to lose my mind.
Dinah Washington. Now, from the America of the 1950s, let's move back a few decades and go to the other side of the world. I've often said that Russian opera singers, particularly of the pre-revolutionary period, some of the greatest singers to be heard, one of course being Fyodor Shalyapin, maybe the greatest of them all. But though there were great Russian basses, tenors, sopranos, and even the old mezzos who were really top-notch, the number of great Russian baritones can be sort of counted on one hand. The one I'm going to talk about today is a bit of a cheat because he was half baritone, half bass. His name was Pavel Andreyev. He was born in 1874, which is just a year after Shalyapin and Caruso for that matter, and he died in 1950, and he stayed in communist Russia. So his career after the age of, 50 or so, was pretty much limited to where he lived, and in any case, he retired around that time and became more of a teacher. Information about him is difficult to obtain, but he is mentioned in the Großes Sängerlexikon, which is a famous German book about all the great opera singers. Now, my German isn't too great, so I hope I'm going to get my information right. Having been born in 1874, he made his debut around 1903 and made most of his records in the early times of the century. He was part of the London season of 1913, where Shalyapin first performed in London. He was part of the same series under the baton of Sir Thomas Beecham at the Drury Lane Theatre. He sang in Paris. He sang all sorts of different roles, from Mussorgsky. He sang Govestchina in Prince Igor. He sang some of the new music of Stravinsky. And he also, apart from the Russian repertoire, sang in Faust and the Zaren Zimmermann from Lortzing, all sorts of things. One of his favorite roles, however, was Tomsky in Pique Dame. Tchaikovsky wrote a lot of operas. People forget that. They always talk about his ballets and his symphonies and his other work and his songs, for that matter. But he wrote quite a bundle of great operas. And this, of course, the role of Tomsky was from Pique Dame, Queen of Spades. And this, obviously, was one of his favourite arias. Now, listed in this German book are his records made well before World War I. This, however, is an electric recording made in 1926. It doesn't mention him recording that late, but I'm sure it's the same person. About the time when he stopped being a professional singer and started being a professor of singing instead at the Conservatoire of Leningrad. This, then, is Pavel Andreyev, and a fine singer he certainly is, singing Tomsky's aria from Pique Dame.
Слава, правда, 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 правда,
From Pavel Andreev, somebody of precisely the same period. In fact, she was born 4 years earlier, but a very, very different sort of singer and a very different history. Clarice was a name you don't hear much anymore. There's a famous British music hall artist called Clarice Maine. This lady was American. Her name was Clarice Vance, or Vance, I suppose it would have been. She was born in Ohio in 1870. She grew up to be very tall. She was apparently about 6 foot tall, with a voice that could be heard very, very clearly over an orchestra. And for some unknown reason, she took to singing what was called coon songs, because in those days there was no political correctness, and white people were quite fascinated with some of the way of expressing themselves that black Americans had in those days. She also had a fairly active life when it came to the marriage stakes. I think she married 4 times, particularly when she was around 30 to 40. Her third husband was a gentleman called Mose Gumbel, and he was quite important because he was in music publishing. That's probably where she met him. And he was the man who gave George Gershwin his first job plugging songs at Remick. In other words, reading the dots, playing the song for people who might like to buy the sheet music. But she divorced him, and she ended up marrying a much younger man in the 20s, who was called Phelps Decker. And he wrote scenarios, in other words, the stories, for silent films. In 1928, he got the sack, possibly because of the new sound films that were coming out. And he got the sack from Universal Pictures. And it wasn't long afterwards before he was found by his wife having committed suicide. So quite an exciting time, not a particularly nice time. Well, as I say, Clarice Vance was known in her earlier days as a coon singer, and she recorded on cylinder, and I bought one of these cylinders literally yesterday. So this is her in her typical form of early singing. She was a good-looking woman. She had the sort of face, to me, that she could somehow have walked into the room yesterday. She looks sort of modern to me. I don't know why I'm saying that, but she does. This is her then in her mid-30s. I think this was made in 1906 when she would have been 36, and looking very much as she does in the picture I've put with this on my website. And without more ado, I'm going to give you Clarice Vance singing Winter Am Coming On. And I recorded this with a modern tablet, but held up to the horn of a 1900 cylinder machine, a phonograph. So it's a real mixture of old and right up to date technology. I rather like this recording. It's quite clear, and you can hear almost the words. You must have been quite a formidable lady. Here's the record.
Save your money, cause the winter's coming on. Sung by Miss Clarice Mann. That is on record. Then they'll do the cash and bang the song.
Currie Vance. Her later life, because by the 20s already she was over 50, she had a few parts in films, probably due to her connection with her last husband. But after his death, she decided to become a dramatic coach and probably helped wannabes try and get into films by teaching them how to act. And she ended up living in first San Francisco, where at the age of 91 she finally died, although by that time she was in one of the local mental hospitals suffering from what I think we would now call dementia. Sad end to a busy life. Well, in my early life, I used to perform at folk clubs. A gentleman called Tony Pilson, happily still with us, used to sing a song called Zombie Jamboree. And this was, of course, a calypso. It was first performed, written by a gentleman known as Lord Intruder, but because he didn't bother about things like copyright, he didn't really publish it officially or even record it, but it sort of caught on. It's a song about zombies in the West Indies coming out at night and having a dance. Naturally, this is an unusual idea, and it got taken up by other performers, one of whom was King Flash. He recorded the song in the USA later on, about 4 years later in 1957, and I think they replaced the original Cemetery with an American one so that it would make more sense to local record buyers. So here is the 1957 version of it. I should add in passing that I happen to live right in the middle of where the Notting Hill Carnival takes place. 35 years ago, however long ago it was, they used to be really fun events, and now it's had the sort of cold hand of organisation put on it by the local council. There's nowhere near enough live music anymore. There's hundreds and thousands of people wandering around getting overcharged for not particularly wonderful food and wondering where all the floats are, and when you see them, they mainly have somebody playing a CD through large speakers. It was much better years ago, and I feel that if I could go back to the 50s and hear this sort of stuff live, it would have been better still. So, here is King Flash doing Zombie Jamboree.
Of the island, some of them are great Californian. Since the season was carnival, they got together in Bacchanal and they singing
back to back, belly to belly. I don't give a damn.
In one hand she holding a quart of wine, the other hand she point that you'll be mine. Believe me folks, yes I had to run, the husband of a zombie ain't no fun. I say oh no, my turtle dove, an old bag of bones I cannot love. Now what you crying?
Back to back, belly to belly, I don't give a damn, cause I've done dead already. Back to back, belly to belly, and the zombie jamboree.
I hear the chorus.
Back to back,
she said I might be lying, but you will see. After you kiss this dead zombie, I never seen such horror in all my life. Can you imagine me with a zombie wife? And what you singing?
Back to back, belly to belly. I don't give a damn, cause I done that already. Back to back.
Thank you.
King Flash, recorded in 1957. Now, you can't get much further away from that on record than going back to 1903 and hearing just about the earliest great tenor on record. I've only played one track of his before, I think, in all these programs. And his name was Francesco Tamagno. He was born in 1850 and died in 1905 of heart problems. He was already ill by the time he started recording, or pretty much. He made a couple of parts of the opera Otello, for which he was famous because he was the very first Otello that Verdi wrote the part for, and that was in 1887, of course. But nobody thought that he'd recorded the great Vengeance duet with a baritone. And then suddenly, while doing some research for Historic Masters, the company that puts out old historic recordings from the original metal parts but pressed onto vinyl, they came across this unpublished record, and it turned out to be this very, very duet. Francesco Tamagno must have been standing away from the horn because he obviously had such a big voice he didn't want to drown out the baritone. So to whom would he have been so generous? Not surely another professional, but somebody who was an amateur singer. And the general opinion is that it was his brother, but nobody really knows for sure. He's perfectly acceptable baritone, maybe not one of the greats, but perfectly acceptable. But this must have been a private recording that Tamagno made for his own gratification, probably never intended to be listened to publicly. But it's been found, and it's fascinating. Because his voice was pitched so high and he could knock off top C's as if they were, well, like somebody eating a peanut, I mean, that easily, it meant that his lower range was limited, and I noticed that in the melody, which when Caruso recorded this, he goes down, Tamagno goes up an octave because he obviously didn't have those bottom notes in his register. Nevertheless, this is one of the definitive recordings. After all, he created the role, and it's fascinating to hear him record this in 1903. The recording quality is pretty damn good for that time, unlike the mushy recording I gave you earlier of Clarice Vance. There's slight damage to the metal parts getting up to about a minute into the recording. You can hear some noise, but only for a couple of seconds. So it's really easy to listen to recording this, and fascinating, if for no other reason than its historical importance, not to mention the quality of the singing. So here is that Vengeance duet, Si pel ciel, with Francesco Tamagno and probably his brother singing this earliest of recordings of this great duet.
Amen.
And from a legendary tenor in 1903 to one of the most famous of the jazz stroke dance bands of the 20s. Jean Golquet was supposed to have been born in France, although some people think he was born in Greece. He was named after his mother, Angela Golquet, that obviously was her family name. She came from Denmark, so it's all mixed up. He was brought up in Greece and Russia, where he studied piano at the Moscow Conservatory as a sort of child prodigy. But the family emigrated to the USA in 1911, and he started performing classical music at the age of just 15. But later joined dance orchestras, and by the time we got to the 1920s, he was beginning to build up his reputation as a band leader and a sort of a businessman. He ended up not just playing himself, but being an agent for about 20 different orchestras, owning dance halls, and yet by the 30s, I suppose, after the crash, he filed for bankruptcy. Nevertheless, he then started again, as businessmen tend to do, and he built up his businesses once again as a musician, conductor, promoter, and he lasted until 1961, where he died suddenly, having taken himself to hospital and died the same day. Well, he is best known for running one of the biggest all-white big bands of the 20s, when, as I say, jazz and dance bands were terms which somehow melded into one another. Where does a dance band end? When does a jazz band begin? In those days, it wasn't too clear. In his band, he had such people as Bix Beiderbecke, Jimmy and Tommy Dorsey, Bill Rank, Eddie Lang, Frankie Trumbauer, Hoagie Carmichael, all sorts of people. And so even the black bands, and as I've said before, jazz was ordered like coffee in the 20s, black or white, even they had great regard for his musicality. I'm going to give you a recording he made in 1927, which is sort of dance band stuff, and yet in the middle there's a sort of jazz section. So you can see where he was coming from even then. A very interesting record of its day, one of my favourites of his recordings. I hope you'll enjoy it too. This is a tune that became very famous in Brazil as one of the early songs made into a bossa nova. Brazilians always know this song. Goodness knows why. But it's called I'm Looking Over a Four-Leaf Clover. This is Jean Colquette's version from 1927. Thank you.
looking over a four-leaf clover that I overlooked before. One leaf is sunshine, the second is rain. The third one, the roses that grow in the lane. You know there's no need explaining that one remaining is someone that I adore. I'm looking over a pretty little four-leaf clover that I overlooked before.
Gene Golcat and his orchestra. Well, now we're coming to the part when I play one of my tracks. Before I do so, a couple of extra bits of information I've found out about some of the 78s I've already played for you today. First of all, track one. Among the people backing Dinah Washington is one of the most famous of modern jazz musicians when he was very young. John Coltrane is playing tenor in that backing group, not much like the stuff that he played later. Also, Clarice Vance, who sang the song Winter I'm Coming On, looking at her history, it seems that she wrote quite a few of the songs that she sang herself. So though I can't verify it, that song was probably written by Clarice Vance herself. Well now, I'm in the middle of doing some recording for a new CD. One of the songs that I love to sing and for which I've written a new arrangement is When I Fall in Love. This is a sound recording of me performing the song with just my own piano accompaniment at a live concert in Norwich, where in fact I'm going to be going tomorrow because it's another year of their annual cancer charity concert. This is one of the previous ones. I'm quite pleased with this recording, even though it's recorded live and therefore won't be totally hi-fi, as it were, but then again, it fits better with the 78s. Anyhow, reminding you to share this link with anybody else you think that might enjoy 78s, spread the word, and also reminding you that I have 78s for sale. They are the duplicates I have. Most of them are operatic, and they are filling my front room. I can't throw them away. They're too wonderful. So please let me know if you know anybody who might be interested in buying them. I don't sell them at the same price as dealers, but I want them to have a good home. And without any more ado, I give you my version of When I Fall in Love and say au revoir until the next time. Ciao for now.
Love is over before it's begun, and too many moonlight kisses seem to cool in the warmth of the sun. Feel that way too. to. When I fall in love with you, or I'll never give my heart. And the moment that I feel that, you feel that way too, when I fall in love, when I fall.